This is Dee Blick. Welcome to Lead Well, Live Well for UK Health Radio. Hello and a warm welcome to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, on UK Health Radio, the world's biggest talk health radio station. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's just lovely, as always, to have your company. Now, one of the amazing privileges I have about being a radio presenter is I get to meet some incredible people. And these can be people that I meet online. We connect, for example, on LinkedIn, or I meet them at an event or a networking group. And it's just wonderful because there's something in me that thinks I really must get that person on my show. And this was definitely the case with my guest today. I met her at an event that was a couple of hundred miles from my home. It was one of these big exhibitions with lots of businesses, and her stand really stood out. It was probably one of the smallest there, but it had the most impact on me because it was papered with all the PR coverage she had secured for her clients. We then got chatting, albeit fleetingly, and I really connected with her and thought, I've got to get you on my show. So a warm welcome to Natalie Trice from Natalie Trice Publicity. She's also a great author, and I'm going to be talking about her book with her later in the show because I read it at the weekend, PR School, Your Time to Shine, and goodness me, is that packed with nuggets for any business wanting to get great PR. That's a long and convoluted introduction, Natalie. Thank you for being so patient and welcome to today's show.
Thank you. Thank you for the lovely introduction. And yeah, it was amazing to meet you at the show. So thank you for having me.
It's amazing, isn't it, as well, that we chatted for about 5 minutes. I said I'd get you on my show. And then here we are a few weeks later. And I just love that about connecting. I never, ever forget a great person that I think, oh, gosh, you're definitely one for Lead Well, Live Well. And I really like that when you go to a show and you might not expect that you're going to be on a radio show a few weeks down the line as a consequence of that.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. And it's I always think it's kind of serendipity. You're meant to meet people at a certain time. So, yes, thank you. It was a great start to BizFest.
Oh, right. I want to now sort of start really with your business, Natalie Trice Publicity, because I know from reading your book and looking on your LinkedIn profile that your business has its origins in a deeply personal story that I'd love you to share.
Thank you. So I have worked in PR for 30 years, probably a tiny bit more, and had a very corporate, predominantly TV career. So I worked for Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, interspersed with tech PR and charity work. And then one of my sons was 19 yesterday. My second son is nearly 17 and he was born with hip dysplasia. So for the first 7 years of his life, we were in and out of hospital and his legs were essentially broken and remade, which, as happens with so many women, my career kind of went on hold to a degree, but I have a very busy brain. The other thing that I found was that there was no support. So really people's thing was, well, it's not cancer, it's not that serious. And you think, well, okay, there's no comparison. It is life. It can be challenging for a lot of people, as I found out. And so every time he needed another operation, I couldn't find the support. I went on to write Cast Life, which was my first book, and set up what is now a global network for parents, but also people that have hip dysplasia. And essentially, I used publicity. So I used my past career to put hip dysplasia on the map and keep my brain functioning during those days when I couldn't carry on with the corporate career, and to give people what there wasn't before. Because we have thousands of people in the network. I'm going to Vancouver to speak at an event in September to surgeons. And I think that there is that there's times when we can't do what we thought we were going to do, but actually maybe that was the path that we were meant to be on. So my career took a very squiggly kind of unorthodox turn, but actually it's led me to feel a lot of I think, a lot of empathy for business owners, because it can feel, you can feel very vulnerable. As we were saying before, when I say it's like your time to shine, for a lot of people, that's like, I can't do that. But actually, we're not asking people to sell their souls to the sun. We're actually saying, is there someone out there in the world who needs what you offer, who needs your services, who needs your expertise? And if you are put in the right place, they'll be able to find you. And that can be life-saving. And I'm very passionate about that. If someone, I don't know, say someone reads the sun in the doctor's surgery, they're about to go in, they're suffering really badly with menopause symptoms, they happen to read something, but from an expert in the health pages, it might be that they're then not fobbed off by the GP who told me, well, if I give you HRT, you'll probably get cancer. So yes, it's such a powerful vehicle for change. And that's why I do what I do.
What I find fascinating about that, and I identify with, is that you took all the skills that you'd gain in this PR capacity of getting column inches, raising awareness through different sorts of media, and you brought all those skills, not just to help your son, but also to ripple, to have a worldwide effect and to help others, which says a lot for your strength of character. And it took me back to a time when my mum had a brain aneurysm and she was being fobbed off by the health service, and I used every ounce of my writing skills to petition the surgeon. We had the feeling that because she was an older lady, they were just ignoring her. So I wrote to the surgeon, I explained why it was important that she was seen to, and you know what, they bumped her up to the top of the list. And the surgeon, actually, at the time I was writing a column for the Financial Mail, and I let them know that I wrote for the media. There was no threat of I'm going, but it was like, you're not just dealing with somebody who's going to go away. And it made me realize then the power of using our talents and skills, so that in my case, I could help mum. She had an operation and she had about 10 good years after that. Had she not had the operation, she would have most certainly died.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with you. I love it when we are able to dig deep, not just into our skills, but also our resilience, because we can have those skills, but feel shy about using them. So I think it's great for you that you did that. And I want to ask you now, so you founded Natalie Tries Publicity, and you're a new business. You're juggling having a little boy with hip dysplasia. You've got another son. You've started a business, and how did you handle early setbacks and successes? Because again, it sounds to me that you're a really tough and resilient cookie.
So the business with my probably ADHD brain has taken a lot of turns. Actually, I formally started Natalie Tries. I've been self-employed for 20 years. We saw the LinkedIn post I did that went viral last week about bullying, which led me to set up on my own. I had no choice. And I kind of got through the events with my son. And then my dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and my stepmother was diagnosed with motor neuron disease at the same time. So again, my career went on halt, and the business kind of stalled again. So I would say that this kind of chapter of Natalie Tries Publicity has been at play since, it'll be 2 years in October. So always self-employed, but I've had to rebuild it again, to the point where my sister now works for me. We have global clients, but I think it is that kind of self-belief and resilience that, okay, these things will happen. They either define you as in I'm going to sit back and do nothing, or I'm going to get back up again. So I think it's one of those things. And I think it's something for a lot of entrepreneurs that we have to rebuild sometimes, and we have to reinvent ourselves and what we're doing, move with the times. So yeah, it's been a journey, and I've kind of got used to the fact that sometimes it changes. It's not this kind of linear path that we think, or maybe we were told. It is actually, especially as women, we have to bend with what the life throws at us. We can't just walk out of the door at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock, get on a train and go into the office. It doesn't, and it took me a long time to realize that doesn't mean we failed. It means actually that we persevere.
That is so powerful. And we're actually going to the first break now. But after the break, I want to talk a little bit more about ADHD and bullying, because they're both things that I strongly identify with, being a person who's got ADHD and also being on the receiving end of bullying, which is interesting. I was chatting about it yesterday to Danny Rowe, who's an Army veteran, who was talking about how bullying made him, he hated it, but fundamentally it made him stronger. And that was why he went into the Army as a soldier, to prove to himself that. Don't go away, everybody. We're going to go to a short break. And then after the break, there'll be lots more from the wonderful Natalie Trice.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blake. Thank you for staying with us. And we're listening to the fabulous Natalie Trice from Natalie Trice Publicity and author of PR School, Your Time to Shine, which I am very keen to get Natalie to dig deep into a little further into the show. So, Natalie, let's just talk about ADHD and then bullying, I guess, whatever order you want to pivot on.
So I've not had a formal diagnosis, but having read, listened, looked at, I quite often describe my brain as being on acid. as you can see from my background, I have a very busy brain. I have a lot of ideas. There's a PhD pending, which is kind of a bit of a joke in our family. But I think it's actually not got worse. It's become clearer as I've got older that that's what it is. So I don't know. I have a client in the States, and she actually looked at the whole idea. Is it menopause? Is it ADHD? Is it both? And I think that we can. I think, again, it's one of those things. It can be so frustrating. You know, I work with my sister. I'm like, I've got another tracker. It's great. And then I'll go, I've got another tracker. It's really, you know. And she just goes with it because she knows that is the way that I process. It's the way that I think. I love the dopamine hit. Why do you think, looking back, Time to Shine, it is, I love that. But also I find it's frustrating at times because the stuff in the background, you don't always get done. So yeah. I have to be strict with myself. And I think it can also be quite exhausting. So a lot of things like the event, the BizFest event we met at. So that was full on all day, 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. Didn't have a wee. Oh, that took me about 3 days to recover because It's just so. And when I'm there, I love it. But the thought of going, I'll be like, I've got to go to London this week. And I'm like, oh, gosh, can I really? And I'll love it when I'm there, and I'll love the networking the following day. But it drives, but I think if you can learn how to manage it and embrace it and then work out what works for you, because there will be some days I kind of got into a little bit of a routine of actually Monday, Tuesday, I will be full on high energy. A Wednesday tends to be a quieter day. It's a rest day from the gym. Maybe I don't book in so many meetings. So I think there is also that element of knowing yourself. And I think that actually, because I understand that, I don't think I would be employable.
Yeah, I think I'm the same as you, that I've not had a formal diagnosis. But what happened, I work with Lucy Pitts, who's my business partner for Sussex Exclusive and this magazine we're producing. And we'd been working for a few months, and she wrote to me one day and said, "Have you ever thought you might have ADHD, Dee?" And I said, "I don't know what ADHD is." She then sent me a list, and I thought she was joking. So I said, "Oh, right, what are you doing?" She basically described me to a T in specific granular detail. And I said, "Well, that's really funny." And she said, "No, I just pulled that from a reliable source on ADHD." And I really identified with it. And I'm certainly with you on that, that dopamine hit and being high octane and juggling several projects. But the bits in the background can absolutely drive me nuts. And it's something, I agree with you, it's probably come out more as I've gotten older, and I'm probably a lot more self-aware as well. But I want to talk to you a bit about bullying, because this is something that I was bullied as a young girl for several years. I was chatting to, as I said, Danny Rowe yesterday, who was bullied. And at the time, it is absolutely awful. It's insidious. It drives you to the point sometimes of thinking you can't go on. And then when you manage to get through it, I think I'd love to say, "Oh, I was such a better individual," but it probably made me even more fearful and angst ridden. It really was in a childhood that was punctuated by various traumas and what have you. And now I can't bear to think of people being bullied, and I will always step in, sometimes in the street. And my husband's like, "You've got to be really careful there, babe, when I'm out and about." But I just wanted to touch on, not for too long, but about bullying. And I saw you'd written that post. It was like got hundreds of thousands, which showed me there's an appetite out there for people being honest and raw and real about when they are being bullied rather than cowering under a stone. So just tell me about your, if you can, yeah, what you're willing to share, tell me about your experience of being bullied and when that was.
I think that particular post was in my last corporate role. I didn't fit. I was called the Gymkhana girl behind my back because apparently I was too posh, and pretty much the entire charity, people didn't talk to me. I took a job someone else wanted, and it was, but it's kind of one of those things where my life has all kind of always been punctuated with it until that point.
Yeah.
I think there is an element of maybe, I don't know if it's the ADHD, but that kind of, we don't conform, we don't fit. So the first time was a school move, about 10, and I was slightly chubby. And I went to this new school and I was the fat kid. And then I went back to a secondary school with the kids that I'd been moved from. So I was then the posh kid. And that bullying kind of lasted a couple of years till kind of GCSE time.
Yeah.
And then it was physical, it was verbal, it was horrible. And I was very little. You know, I was shy, I was very small. The safe place was Christian Union. And I think that... And then it was kind of spurts within work. The first PR job I was interviewed for, I didn't get the job because I wasn't aggressive enough for them. I'm not an aggressive person. I'm a good person. You know, you don't have to be aggressive to be in PR. That, I think, is one of the worst traits, as we were talking about
before. Nice and kind and intuitive.
Right. And just kind of, and there were always times where it was like, just little things, and it's the little things, the beginning of the school gates. I hated that. That was, and ironically, we're talking about this, and my son, it's his last full day of school today because he's about to do his GCSEs. And I waved at one of my friends coming out of the school drive, and I actually cried because we've been at that school for 10 years. And there's two friends there that have been really formative in our move to Devon. And I thought, God, that is a world away from when I used to drive out of the school gates of my son's first school in the home counties. And I used to cry because the women were so mean. And I was crying because I was emotional, thinking, I'm going to miss this. And yeah. It's so easy just to be nice. That, I think, beggars belief in the human race. How difficult is it to be nice, and what kick do you get out of making someone else feel rubbish? I will just never understand that. Never.
No, I'm so with you on that, because you were talking about not fitting in, and I was very much as a little girl. I didn't fit in physically. I had ginger hair, very long, thick ginger hair, and I was chubby as well. And then to add to that ignominy, I also got free school uniform and free school meals because mum and dad got divorced. Money was conspicuous by its absence. And I knew that my uniform was free school uniform, and everybody else knew it was, because you didn't get great quality free school uniform. You go into a special shop for it and all the rest. And I can remember queuing up for the free school dinners and feeling that stigma. And I think that children can be spectacularly crass and insensitive, and they pick on you because you stand out. And I feel the same as you, that now I stand out for all the right reasons. I'm a powerful woman in business, and I try and use my platform to help and support and nurture others for the good. Just like you were saying as well about being in PR, that in a way, bullying can shape how you become as a person in the future, because you just think, I'm not having that happen to anybody else on my watch. And it's not great. If I could erase it, I would. People say, oh, it was the making of me. It wasn't the making of me, quite frankly. I'd much rather not have had years of being the one that had people at the school gates and pulling my hair and calling. And I'm just so grateful. Today I'm doing a TEDx talk in a few weeks' time, and I'm going to be talking about that bullying, and how thrilled I am today that children have a voice, that it's something that's jumped on, and that parents in the main realise the responsibility they have to make sure their kids do not have this streak running through them. So we're just going to go to the second break, and then I'm going to take you back into your business, and we're going to talk about your fabulous book. But it's really, really thought-provoking, the conversation so far.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, and the lovely Natalie Price. So, Natalie, we're going to switch gears now. And I want to go back into your business, because I want to know, when did you, or did you reach that magical point when you knew that your business was not just taxiing along the runway as of an aeroplane, it was whoosh, it was going up into the clouds?
I don't think I have. That's a great question. It's, I don't know. I always feel there's more to be done. I feel like that we kind of, we get to the 2 year mark after my dad died. So I still feel like, okay, 20 years being self-employed in one form or another, but really with this kind of new feeling of the business and the kind of niche of health and wellness, with some HR worked into that as well, because I do think that has a strong element. But I think that as an entrepreneur, you can never, I can never quite settle. So PR is such a strange beast. One, because it's such an unknown, and maybe that's something we'll come on to talk about, but the clients never last forever. And especially in this world, you know, in this economy, they might run out of money. They might lose a client. We've had cases where they're like, well, you've done such a good job, we don't need you anymore. Yeah. So you're constantly, I think I never get comfortable. You're constantly looking for the next piece of coverage, the next hit. How can you be better? How can you be more responsive? We've talked about AI between us in the past. And again, I think that the worst thing that you can do is rest on your laurels and think, I've made it, because we had last month, one of our biggest clients stopped because that part of their work had finished. And my immediate thing is like, oh, it's panic. Where's the next client going to come to? How are we going to do this? You know, and I think also as a woman, maybe the ADHD, then your instant thing is kind of like, did we do something wrong?
Yes, absolutely.
So I think it's never like, it never feels like enough for me. I wrote something the other day and it was about reaching your potential. And someone said to me, well, even if you do the PhD, will that be enough? And I was like, probably not. It will never feel enough to me. So I think it's just an ongoing journey that you can try to enjoy.
Yes. And
it's forever chasing, especially PR, because you're forever chasing the next feature, the next interview, the next piece that is never guaranteed. So, but I enjoy it. I enjoy the flexibility. I love living by the sea. I like being able to go swim outside, do all of those things. But it can be quite consuming of where's the next client coming from.
I don't think that's just having a PR business. I think that any self-employed business, unless they've got a guaranteed seam of uninterrupted business flow, I think that's just part of the terrain that we accept. And I think also I get you about the ADHD, because I'm the same. Last year I thought, right, I'm going to settle down because I don't take on client work now. I built the business and thankfully I became the breadwinner. Everything's worked out really lovely. So last year I thought, I'm going to rest on my laurels. I'll write a fiction book. And I had a few months off and I just thought, actually, there's more to me yet. This is not enough for me. Yes. And then the next thing I knew, I'm producing magazines, I'm TEDx's, I've written another book on marketing, and I've started to mentor people now. And I really love it, because I think I realise, and I'm sure it'd be interesting to explore this with you, that my work does not feel like work. It never really did. Even when I was the breadwinner and had to bring the money in to pay the bills, it was almost like, aren't I lucky that I am paid to go out and show clients how to grow with marketing and doing writing? And so I think the fact that you're never satisfied with enough means that you're always on that road less traveled, which is where your antennae's open to looking out, not just for clients, but I would imagine also you're looking out for opportunities in which you can put your client in the sweet spot so they get coverage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always the angle, the story. I can be talking to someone, I was like, oh, that would make a great PR story. You know, I can be swimming. I love swimming outside. Greatest therapy I've ever found. And I could be talking to someone, I'll literally be like, oh, that would be a great PR story. It's like my brain does not switch off. And no. I think that it works in a very kind of, I don't know. My first job was actually PR, quick-saving boilers, Valent boilers. And I had this wonderful boss. She was amazing, so clever, and taught me so much. And she was like, they don't want the bread and butter of the plumbing magazine for this boiler. They want the extra. What's the difference? Is it that it looks a certain way? Is it that the boiler is more eco-friendly? And for me, that's the thing, because a client might be like, that doesn't work, Natalie. But it does. It does, because we want people to know who you are, what you do, and how you can help them. And that's not necessarily saying I'm a therapist. There's something deeper. And I think that that is where my brain will take me often, hence the, hence the hips. So now I'm doing 40 outdoor swims over the next year in memory of my dad. He taught me to swim. He was a great swimmer. He wasn't educated, but he was a good swimmer, and he had Alzheimer's. So he lost his memories. So this is for a hospice where they're helping people make memories. And obviously I can do the PR for that, but that was a moment of like, oh yeah, that would work.
Yes. I think there's a gift and a curse in a brain that doesn't switch off.
Yes.
The gift is that I always say, when I do quite a bit of speaking for the Women's Institute, I'm on their speaker roster, and they were asking me the other day about writing books. I've written quite a few books now. And she's like, is there a time of the day when you switch off? And I said, seriously, I can pop to the loo in the middle of the night, and then I've got an idea and I'm scribbling it down furiously at 3 a.m. You know, I can be in a cafe and the waitress says something, or I see somebody and suddenly I'm writing on a napkin. And so the awful thing once was when I blew my nose and I had black ink all over my nose, which was spectacularly crass. But the point I'm making is that there's something wonderful about having a brain that doesn't switch off. But there are times when we absolutely have to make ourselves have downtime. Otherwise, we go bonkers.
Yeah.
And I just want to take you, you're obviously, I mean, when I looked at the coverage that you have secured for your clients, it is nothing short of spectacular.
Oh.
And I don't want anybody, any of my wonderful listeners listening into our conversation away, not to realize how good you are. And I think when you become an unconscious competent, you're just great at doing it. You kind of assume this is how it's done. But I want to know, how do you secure coverage for clients? Do you have a secret source? And I know I do it. I work, I get coverage for clients. But I would love you to share. You've got a new client. I mean, how do you actually get that coverage for them? And you get coverage in some huge publications. We're not just talking the local online magazine. We're talking big old national and global brands. Just share a bit of your secret sauce.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you. One thing I do is I flatten the media landscape. So when I say that, it's like, I remember someone saying, we'll start small. We'll start with the local paper. That's great. If you are super local, say you've got a jumble sale, you need local people there. If you're not, you just, you know, go big or go home.
Yeah.
That is kind of the thing. One client, she's just about to finish. Her first piece of coverage was Forbes. And last week it was Forbes and two pieces in USA Today. She's a financial expert. The thing is, I want the coverage. And I think this is so important with everything in life. How much do you want it? I wanted to get better. I wanted my dad to live happily as long as he could. I want my clients to be where I know they belong. Now, I send out hundreds, if not thousands, of pitches a month, whether they're looking for requests. I try to be fast. I try to give them what I want, what they want, what they need, what they ask for. That doesn't always, I've not always been successful with that. And you don't get every pitch. You don't get every win. You've got every PR and business owner going for those same pieces. But I think the trick is not to give up. So someone will say, we tried. How many times? Once. I feel like I'm constantly doing English comprehension every day. And at this point in the business, I think that's the other thing. I love it. So while I could get some interns, or it's me at the moment, it is me pitching. And I have one other team member. She will help. But at this, I still enjoy that part of my work. I don't just want to be a suit in the background. And then I also have this kind of nemesis of Susan. I don't want Susan getting the coverage. I want it. I want it for me, or I want it for my clients. And I think it is just tenacity, and also knowing this is, I'm asking you to do this for a reason. And we touched on this before. It's not selling your soul for that one headline that could potentially be totally destroying of your business or your reputation. That's not what we're looking for. You are looking for the right message in the right place, because that's where your people are. And so it is that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so powerful, isn't it? That the other thing as well that I know you're doing it is that working with the client to find the real core messages that a journalist is looking for. Because I know as an editor that people come to me and they're not even pitching, they're just saying, will you publish my press release? It's like, that's not how it works. Right. It works that you chat to me about a storyline that aligns with the tone and content of my publication and how I present news in the publication. I know for one of the publications, they don't publish press releases. They want stories. They want tips. And so it's like I always say to anybody that comes, how much have you read? Have you read Sussex Exclusive? Have you read this magazine? Because if you have, then you'll know that's not how we roll. And I would imagine with you that there's a really big part of you that you have to spend a lot of time with a client, because they will come with, I want you to promote my new boiler. And you're like, well, hang on a minute. A publication is not waiting to hear all about your new boiler. They actually want something that's going to be aligned with, if they've got a green focus, a sustainability focus. And I think, I would imagine that your role is as much about educating clients as to what's possible and the part they play as it is to actually going out and getting coverage for them.
Yeah, I think there's a big part in that. So generally, if someone comes to work with us, I'll have read and I will know straight away. So we had something at the weekend. I was like, that would be amazing. I will know one from what they send, but also the feeling. I think we don't tap into that enough. And I try with those red flags. I'm like, this won't work. I know that this is not going to work because that person's energy is just wrong for me. So that's important. But quite often I can be like, okay, I know where I will pitch you and what I could get you in the first 3 months. And that's quite instant for me.
Yeah.
So I think that is the thing. And then sometimes it's just saying to them, I think this would be good because of this, or trying to pull out what's the story. And again, I think that there is this kind of, journalists don't owe us anything. I mean, I know for my entire career, there's this back and forth between journalists and PRs, journalists and it's a relationship that should be easy, but it's not always that way. And there's a lot on LinkedIn that I see. And actually, we can help each other, but we have to do it the right way. I think the expectation of going to a journalist and saying, you need to cover my press release. The press release is only a vehicle for information. It's literally like almost like a business card of saying, this is a story, because actually what the story might be for Vogue could be very different for Grazia.
Absolutely. And it's the angle, isn't it? Which is something that I always say, that you need to look upon your story as a diamond with many facets. And what are the facets that are going to really appeal to that journalist or that editor? And you must have seen all manner of, we're going to talk about your book in a moment, because I really want you to share about that. I just think it's brilliant. I read it this weekend and thought, what an absolute pocket rocket of a book that is.
Oh, thanks.
You'd said as well, in fact, I think we'll come on to the book now, because I like the bit about you've got, it's called PR School, Your Time to Shine, a masterclass in publicity for you and your business. And that is exactly what this book delivers. There's no fluff or filler. It's just packed with real expertise and know-how. And you've also made it very modular, very accessible. You've given little tasks for the reader. But I just thought, you know what? For anybody who's stuck on how to get PR for their business. And I remember when you sent it, you said it was pre-AI. And I thought, that is marvellous that it's pre-AI. That is absolutely marvellous. You mention AI in the book. But I just loved it. And let's just talk now about what made you write this book and how it's been received.
Mm-hmm. So I wrote it after my first book, Cast Life, which was the hip one. I was like, I should really write something about what I actually do. And again, it's giving people... Not everyone can afford a PR agency or a PR person to work with them, but the media is there to be accessible. And that's hopefully what it does, is that people can read it and think, I can do it. Because so often, especially with things like my membership, or if I'm coaching or if I'm teaching someone, it's not for someone like me. Yeah, what do you mean it's not for someone like you? Well, I'm only starting, or I'm small, or this happens for other people. And it's really kind of like that feeling again, thinking about it, of not belonging. They feel like they don't fit in or they don't belong. Why shouldn't it be you? They're looking for, you know, they're looking for a menopause expert, or they're looking for a psychiatrist, or they're looking for a teacher. Why should it not be you? And I think that we then, and I think I talk about it in the book, I'm not sure, but we talk about imposter syndrome. We talk about that. If they're looking for content, why shouldn't it be you? Why should your words not be there? And I think there is something, and I'll see someone. I saw someone a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, he is a masterclass in publicity. It's a young kid. His mum died from Alzheimer's. I think they're called the FTD brothers. So he was running the marathon with a fridge on his back. And he did a interview on BBC Breakfast. Never seen them before. I mean, he's a young man. Maybe he's in his mid-20s. He and his brother both have this particular Alzheimer's dementia gene. They're going to get it. Their mother died from it. And he says, I've got 10 to 15 years left of memory. I'm going to make dementia visible. I don't know if he'd had media training. He wasn't speaking off a press release. He wasn't doing, you know, when you see people and they're doing all this stuff because the media trainers told them. I mean, he was just literally talking from the heart. And as someone who lost their father from Alzheimer's, I was like, that is what matters. Not someone from the government on Laura, whatever her name is, on a Sunday morning, not someone that has been media trained right down to the last exclamation mark. It's people that have truly lived something that are going to make a difference to someone else's life, because there is nothing more isolating than being told that your child is sick or that your dad's about to die and you feel alone. So if we can use that power of what people know and translate it into, you know, actionable information using the press, that I think is so powerful. And that's what I wanted people to get from that book, of like, I was a mum on a mission who couldn't find information for what we were going through. That means that now we have. You know, I'll be meeting someone in New York who I met through the book, whose child also had hip dysplasia. We have people in Russia, China, New Zealand with the first book. And it just creates that ripple effect. If we keep everything to ourselves, that's not going to be the good for the better of the world. And that is my passion. Share what you know to make life better for somebody else.
I agree. And I think what I also liked about your book, you don't just explain that, you also show the how. And that's really important for me in any book, that we can say, here's the reasons why you should do this. And I'm like, wow, wow, wow. And then, but here's how you should do this. And you talk about the different types of media. You talk about press releases and great emails and blogs and so on, because not everybody is equipped with that know-how. And what I got from your book was, this is a really fabulous grounding for anybody to inspire them to want to realize that they are actually a commodity that can get good exposure for themselves or for their business. So I was really impressed with that. And I wondered, is there any point in the future will you feel the need to update it? Because there's no need to do a second one, because this is the guide. It's more about, okay, times have changed a bit. What's changed? And have you thought about that, or will you leave it as it stands?
No, I did think about it. I want to do my PhD. That's what I really want to do, my PhD. I've got a 3/4 written novel. I won't update it, because I think that it's the fundamentals. The fundamentals of PR are, your story's not always going to work, but work out what your story is and its relationships. So as you can write a ChatGPT pitch, people do it, we all do it, but just don't send it as it is. Don't use chat to write a straight press release. Your tools are only as good as you. And I think that it can be sloppy. So that basically says, if you need to, pick up the phone to the Times and say, I've got this story about how to save £500 a month on your mortgage. If that's what you're going to do, that's what you're going to do. But tell them, reach them, and So I'm not going to update it because I still think it's the fundamental foundations of how to get yourself into the press.
Well, I would agree with you because obviously I'm in the media. I am on the both sides of it. So I read that book as thinking, gosh, well, I'm in the media and these tips would, it would definitely get someone approaching me. If they've approached me in the way Natalie's suggesting, I will be receptive to a conversation. So we're now at that time in the show where I want you to share your favourite motivational quote and then you're going to ask me a question. So what's your favourite quote?
My favourite quote is, every time we don't disappoint them, we disappoint ourselves, from Glennon Doyle.
Well, say that again.
Every time we don't disappoint them, we disappoint ourselves.
Wow. That's a powerful one.
From Untamed. I read it. I listened to it once and I was in my car and I can remember stopping my car and I was like, God, that's so true. We're so, you know, even if you're not a people pleaser, we're so kind of conditioned. Don't upset them. Don't say the wrong thing. Even if it means that we are upsetting ourselves. And again, as women, we do this all of the time. Don't say the wrong thing. Don't look the wrong way. Don't do this. Don't. And it's not always easy, but as such an injustice to ourselves of saying, okay, yes, I'll take your kids and yes, I'll do this. And yet, you get to the point, you're like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Put yourself first. I think that's wonderful. So Natalie, the final part of the show for you, what is your question for me?
Oh, so I would like to know, as an editor, as a radio host, what makes a good pitch to you?
I think there's two things. One is the way in which a person talks to me and pitches to me. And when I say I don't want people being like Uriah Heep and being all obsequious, but show a little bit of respect for the fact that I'm an editor, just to say, and with me, the way to my heart would be, for example, something personal. I've got your book, Dee. I'm really enjoying it. Immediately, that's a door opener. But I had one which was, hi, Dee, want my clients to come on your show, on your podcast, LOL. And I just wrote back, I said, I don't have a podcast. And he said, oh, radio show. And he put 11:30 at night. And I thought, well, there's no chance. And he was a PR person. So what makes a great pitch for me is when I can see that the person pitching to me has a respect for me as a media person, that they've looked into me and my background, but also they've looked into the publication. They've said, hi, I've looked at your magazine. I've looked at Sussex Exclusive. I really feel that we can add some value. There's some synergy in, and they might quote features that they could do something, they could write about. So I think that to me is at the heart of a great pitch. And then I look at how they have pitched. If it's full of spelling mistakes, my first thought is, this is going to be a lot of work for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to work with this person. So I think time spent pitching, but also recognize that editors are like everybody else. We're human beings. You wouldn't go up to, say you're on a first date, you wouldn't just go up to a stranger and say, hi, I like the look of you, let's go out for dinner. The person would be like, well, that's a bit full on. You might say, oh, hi, you know, you're looking really lovely today. Great to have a chat with you. Can we have a coffee? You'd go into it gently. I think when people come in at me with a very strong pitch, which is almost like, we've got all this going on, we'd love it if you'd feature us. And I'm thinking, I'm sure you would love it if I feature you. But why would I feature you? But please just start by imagining we're on a first date. Be nice to me. Just as I would. It's like as a marketer, I'm exactly the same, that if I'm going to in the days when I was looking for clients, I would be saying, I love your business. I've gone through your website. I've seen your videos. I think there's so much here. And I'd love to have a chat with you about potentially us working together. But if I went in there and said, I want to work with you, let's meet. They're going to be like, sorry, there's a bit of a disconnect here. So yeah, that's my answer, Natalie. I hope that's,
I think I loved going gently, because I think even when I was like, oh God, yeah, sometimes you can just be like firing things off and actually think, is it right? Is it for them? What can you, and there will be times when I've done some research recently and my pictures have been so personalized.
Yes.
Nothing. I'm like, and then I can send something else and it will be live in an hour. So it's almost like treat every, I guess it's the thing, isn't it? Treat every email with the same thought, because they are essentially doing you a favour. This is the thing.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, Natalie, it has been lovely having you on the show today. I've really enjoyed it. So that's a warm thank you to the fabulous Natalie from Natalie Trice Publicity. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I'd now like to flick the switch and just talk about you yet again. If there's one thing that I hope you've taken from Natalie today, is that she's warm, she's tenacious, and she really marshals all her talents into all aspects of her life. And I think, look at yourself now, you're probably absolutely buzzing and bursting with so many strengths, so many talents, so much capability, that maybe it's time to have a stock take and look at how far you've come in this world, how amazing you are, and how you probably take all your magical qualities and attributes for granted, when sometimes just reflecting on your sheer amazingness is what is in order. So as usual, I'm signing off today, giving you a virtual hug. Stand in your circle of power, embrace everything, all the good stuff that the world has lined up for you. And I'm back next week. So that's goodbye from Dee Blick. Lead well, live well for UK Health Radio.
You've been listening to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio.